post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the near post. My name's Eamon Flanagan, and we're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network. With me in the studio this week talking football, I'm delighted to say we've got Aaron Walker. How are you, Aaron?
Not too bad, Eamon.
Just flew in from the Socceroos versus Japan game, so we're going to have all the news and the pitch side updates from Aaron. And Russ Gibbs is with us. Hi, Russ. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Eamon.
Not bad. We still haven't mentioned that Ronaldo has left Manchester United.
Has he gone?
No, I don't think
officially?
So. I know you Man United fans are not happy about that. But anyway, what have we got this week? We're going to talk Socceroos, of course. We're going to analyse Nicky Cole. Should he play? Did he play? Was he any good? And should he stay? And also we've got an interview with Young Matildas coach Alan Stajak, who updates us on the next few weeks and the plan ahead for the Young Matildas. And we've got all the big issues, quiz, dedications and more. Email us at nearpost2xx@gmail.com. And catch the podcast on the blog every week, www.nearpost.blogspot.com. Show dedication, as always, this week's no different. We dedicate the show this week to Sonitarium, makers of Weetabix. What is... Weetabix, is it in Australia? I don't know whether it's Weetabix or Weetabix. Weetabix. Whichever, anyway. Good old Sonitarium. Tim Cahill is one of their sponsors, and they had a full-page ads in most of the national newspapers after the Japan-Australia game. And it basically said, you know, of course he had his Bix or whatever it is, but they didn't put it in the Daily Telegraph in Sydney. They only placed the ad in the Fairfax papers. So $60,000 of advertising didn't go to Daily Telegraph purely because of their stance against the Socceroos and against Timmy Cahill. So good to see that Sonitarium. Get out there, buy your Bix and support Sonitarium, and a big raspberry to the Daily Telegraph. Now, the quiz question this week, and I know, Russ, you're of... He was so nervous, Russ was, that he actually asked me the quiz question before this show. I mean, that's how... He's trying to catch you out, Aaron, so be careful here. Anyways, who scored all the Socceroo goals in the recent... or in the last stage of the World Cup qualifiers? I'll give you some time to think about it. Who scored all the Socceroo goals in the last qualifying stage of the World Cup qualifiers? I will help you with the games.
We're on. OK, we're live again.
We'll wish them luck.
Okay, I don't know what happened there. Absolute technical hitch, but it gave you just a couple more seconds to think about who scored all the Socceroos goals in the World Cup qualifier. I can see, Aaron,
can I start?
Aaron, you're not impressed. Okay, well, yeah. No, Aaron, let Aaron start. Go on. Japan versus Australia 2-1. You were there, so.
Yeah, I know who got the Australian goals. They're both Cahill.
Yeah, we're only Aussie focused, mate. We don't care about anyone else. Okay. Or who else? Next game, I'm going to give you Bahrain in Sydney 2-0. Any ideas?
Harry Kewell,
no.
And
that was a game.
One was
Harry Kewell got one.
Harry Kewell got
against
one.
Someone.
He did get. Yeah, okay. No. I'm going to give you that. He got one against Uzbekistan in the 2-0 win in Brisbane.
Mark Bresciano scored against Bahrain away.
He did, okay, we got that one. So Bresciano against, that was a pretty important one. Uzbekistan away, remember that one?
Yeah, I do. He got the goal in the last couple of seconds when we completely
deserve
it. No, that was Bahrain.
Scotty Chipperfield
in
with
Uzbekistan.
A header.
Yeah, that's not bad. Not bad. He's going pretty well.
On the back post.
Okay, now we're back to Bahrain in Sydney. The game before the Japan game.
Yeah, Dave Carney got
the second. Dave Carney got one.
Yep, he did.
Following in. And who scored? The former Derby player?
Stojoski,
okay. You're going well, lads. And Qatar 0-0, who scored?
Nobody.
Tricky. Well done, Roth. Well
yeah,
done.
Got that one. I love that.
And Uzbekistan, we got Kewell 2-0 up in Brisbane on a rainy night. Kewell scored, and the first guy got with a header.
Oh, God.
Was it Kennedy?
Yeah, Josh Kennedy, a header from Bresciano's cross. And that leaves just the Qatar game, 4-0 in
Kennedy
Brisbane.
Kennedy scored a header in that one as well.
Well done, Russ.
A couple of goals from Brett Emerton.
Oh, that is awesome.
And the third goal was scored by Timmy Cahill.
Timmy Cahill. Aaron, he takes the biscuit. That's pretty good.
I remember that one.
Yeah. You did it. Well done. I'm stunned.
I'm stunned as well. I can remember that.
Okay, well, we've got some news coming up. What is the news? We've got some fantastic news this week, Russ.
I do. Henrik Larsson, the former Manchester United great, is off to the Gold Coast.
I can't believe you said that.
I would have said Barcelona, personally.
Barcelona great? Former Barcelona and Manchester United great is off to the Gold Coast.
I can't. I'm stunned.
Or he may be off to the Gold Coast. We're not sure. But
okay, 100,000.
He played for someone else as well, didn't he?
Helsingborg, that was
Helsingborg, thanks.
Yeah, okay, lads. You've had your joke. Gold Coast is set to replace Brazilian midfielder Jefferson with compatriot Anderson Alves da Silva after the former suffered a serious knee injury last week. Apparently, Anderson is brother of Robson, who is also playing with the Brazilian team.
And I'm excited because the long-awaited FFA national curriculum is out and online for viewing.
Well, go and read it. Luke Pilkington is still rumoured to have won Football Superstar. We ran that rumour last week and we're going to keep running it until we know
whether he does win or not. And we also mentioned last week that Josh Kennedy was probably going to go to Nagoya Grampusay, and now he has.
Well, we're right up with it.
Yeah. Lisa Devanna and Kate Gill are still flying the flag for Australian women playing abroad as they get amongst the goals for their representative sides in the USA and Sweden.
Interestingly, in the debate between which code is the biggest national team in Australia, the Wallabies drew just 20,000 to Melbourne, confirming, in my view, the Socceroos are the number one team in Australia.
Certainly are. I'd agree with that. The AFL still hope to get a second team in Sydney, despite falling AFL crowds across the country, and particularly in Sydney. Will the A-League get there first? Of course they will. That's a silly question.
And finally, Mark Viduka still hasn't signed a contract to play football at all next year, or indeed declare his intention for the Socceroos. And I noticed close mate Josip Skoko tipping that he's going to retire altogether recently.
Yeah, well, some people think he already has, but not me. And the Socceroos drew 378,000 viewers on pay TV this week, making it the number one rated show on pay TV for the last 2 weeks, actually. So good sign of the times. I suppose no surprise there, but just another sign there. Of the pulling power of the Socceroos. Just quickly on Mark Viduka, Aaron, you were down in at the Japan game last week, and we're going to talk about the Socceroos right now. But should Viduka, you know, do we need him? Should he come back?
I wouldn't. It's a tough one because he hasn't shown an attitude which would suggest that you'd want him back. I mean, he has to want to be there, and he hasn't shown that yet. But the system we're playing with three attacking midfielders, one striker, you need someone that can hold onto the ball for a few seconds and give the support time to get around them and make some runs off them. Kennedy doesn't do that, and neither does Scott McDonald, so I think we need him, or someone in his ilk.
Well, that's a good point. Is there anybody in his ilk? Viduka, and I don't think Viduka is going to come back personally. I mean, he might be sort of. He doesn't have a contract at the moment. I'm sure that's not a problem, but I don't think he's going to stay around for another year and then come back to the World Cup. That's just my opinion.
No, I think you're right. I think if he was going to come back at all, he would have done the exact same thing Harry Kewell did about a year ago and came back and shopped himself around in a Socceroos jersey for potential clubs. Given that he didn't do that, it kind of suggests to me that he's not really looking for a club.
No. And although so he may be looking for a club, but to extend his season into the World Cup is a different... You know, does he want to embarrass himself? I mean, it's all right going down with Newcastle, but playing the World Cup is different. Russ, on the forward line... Kennedy played last week. Pimba Bate would take Aaron to task, of course, with Aaron suggesting we have three midfielders and a striker. I heard Pim say last week that we actually play with three forwards. I'm just saying what Pim said. So what do you think, Russ? A forward line, it seems to be one of the problems. I mean, I think we've got a few problems, but is Kennedy the man?
I don't. If you're going to play one up front, I think you have to play Kennedy because, as Aaron says, there's nobody else. Scott McDonald can't do that role. Josh Kennedy can't really do that role, but he's probably better suited to it than Scott McDonald is. I think they missed a trick in these last couple of weeks in the forward line. I think they need at some stage to try a 4-4-2, because I think during the World Cup, at some stage, if we're having to chase a game or even indeed win a game, we're going to have to go to 4-4-2 at some stage, and I think he should have done that in the last couple of games and played with a Kennedy and a McDonald. I'd like to see him bring Rukavica in myself. I think he could be a bolter for the World Cup next year.
It's a big ask, though. I mean, I'm a big fan of Rukavica, but it's a big ask to come from, well, as we know, the A-League. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't played in Europe other than a couple of minutes, I think. So, you know, really, we're all saying, oh, is he going to be a bolter? But really, it's until he plays, you know, 6 months at any sort of level.
But until they give him a chance, we're not going to know, are we? I mean, I think it's an opportunity. We should chuck him in there and let him go, let him have a go. You can introduce him gently. He's played for the Olympic team, obviously.
I did read a while ago that his club over in Holland had sold one of their first strikers and hadn't replaced them yet, so it might maybe a bit of an opportunity to get a bit more game time.
Encouraging sign, and he did do well at the World Cup. Scott McDonald, he only played for 10 minutes or so the other night. I mean, there's still a lot of talk about Scotty. What do you think?
Well, the last 10 minutes he was on the field, I don't think we had the ball at all in our attacking half, so he barely got a touch of it. I think he has potential to play for the Socceroos, just not as a lone striker. It has to be in a 4-4-2, and if we're not going to use that, we don't have a use for it.
No, okay. What about the game the other night? How did you see it, Aaron? In the 70,000 people there, good atmosphere?
Yeah, it was good. It was a good atmosphere. I really enjoyed it. And it was good to see them have a bit of heart and come back from a 1-0 win in a game that didn't technically mean anything. I thought that showed good character.
It was a little bit of a bit worried in the first half, though. You know, a bit more of the same. And obviously, the Japanese were pressing us quite hard.
It was. We did play much better in the second half. And, we were slow to take out of the blocks, I agree.
Yeah. What about... I know you're waiting for it, aren't you, Ross? Nicky. Tricky Nicky. He finally played. What's your thoughts? Crystal Palace's superstar. Man United lost Ronaldo. Are they going to sign Tricky?
Nicky Carl's on his way to Old Trafford. We're spreading that rumour. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
he was a little bit out of sorts. I don't think the game really suited him much. He didn't really stand out at all for me. He played okay in patches, but they all did. It was a bit bitty in the first half. Just to agree with what Aaron says, I think the impressive thing about the whole game was the fact that for the first time we've gone a goal down. It was interesting to see how they responded, and they did everything they possibly could and came back much stronger for it.
But, there's been a big clamour for Nicky Carr, and I think sometimes it's been just media talk, really. What do you think, Aaron? Did he got his chance. He got a whole game.
I don't think Nicky is Australia's secret Lionel Messi who's ready to come in and win Australia the World Cup like a lot of people seem to think. I think he is a good player, and he deserves to be in and around the squad. He had a decent game the other night, slow in the first 20 minutes, turned the ball over a couple of times, maybe trying to play a couple of passes which were a bit too difficult when he could have gone the easier option.
I thought that was the difference, actually. You know, when Harry Kewell's out there, we often criticise Harry for not doing enough, but you know when he gets the ball he's able to keep the ball and he showed the difference between Nicky Carl on the left and Harry Kewell. I mean, Kewell is just that he finds a player. He may not do wonders with it.
Having said that, Carl did take the free kicks all night and they were fantastic, which is an area which Australia have struggled in the past.
Well, normally they put in Luke Wiltshire to take the free kicks.
No, Wiltshire does do a good job.
Oh, you like Wiltshire?
No, he's okay. He's not fantastic, but at least he gets it in the spot. But it's something. A free kick taker is something Australia hasn't had over the last 10 years, really. And I think he did a fantastic job the other night. And when it shows when you've got a good free kick taker and Timmy Cahill in the intercept pieces, it means goals.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, Carl is a bench player. And I think like if Bresciano and Kewell and Co and Emerton are around, I can't see Nicky Carl getting a gig.
He was under a lot of pressure, though, as you say. I mean, it was people clamouring for him to get into the team, and he finally got the start that he's been wanting as well.
He's under pressure, but it's a national team. I mean, if you get a chance to play in 70,000 people in front of the MCG and you're a professional player and you're 26, 27, I mean, it's not going to get much easier than that, is it? Because
he didn't stand out brilliantly, but he did okay.
Defensively, I don't think he did defensively. I think he was weak.
Out there on the left is not his position. He needs to be in the centre right behind the strikers. And like it or not, that is Timmy Cahill's position. He's not going anywhere. And while Cahill's around, he's not going to play. I think there is a room for him in the squad. I think he's fantastic on the bench, sitting behind the strikers.
I just thought you said that. I think he's fantastic on the bench. I just have visions of it.
Say Australia's in the World Cup. We're one goal down with 15 minutes to go.
Yep.
We've been playing the one whatever with one striker. You throw in an extra striker, play two up front, Nicky Carl sitting right behind them. All of a sudden, you've got a playmaker who's good at passing behind two good strikers and, you know, breaking down a packed defence. I think that's Nicky's role for Australia.
Yeah, I think I agree. You might give us something different. But I think you're right. Cahill's got the nod and probably even Holman is in Pimber Vakes.
I agree that Nicky Carl's got great vision. He can pick a pass, and I think that's something that we will see eventually. Give him more game time, which I think he'll get now that the friendly's coming around.
All right. What about Reece Williams, Shane Stefanuti?
Reece Williams didn't have a great game, unfortunately. On debut, maybe a bit of nerves, gave the ball away a lot, a bit out of position, a bit too far forward a couple of times. And
only 20, though, playing in the English Championship League, which apparently is a great league.
He's with Burnley, and they just got promoted.
They did.
Might stay on. So.
Although now he's gone back down to Middlesbrough.
Has he? I've heard he was actually going to sign with Burnley.
Oh, well, they interviewed him last week, and they said he said that he was going back to Middlesbrough. But you may have heard something since, so...
I have. And he said, right then, he said, I'm a Middlesbrough player right now, and I don't want to speculate about my future, but all the rumours are he's going to stay with Burnley.
Okay, well, if he gets into the Premier League, then that might do him some good, and particularly for the future years. Is there any young Shane Stefanuto? No chance.
No, he's really third choice behind Chipperfield and Carney, and he's just showing a lack of depth in our position. I personally would have preferred them to use Jameson the other night.
But going back to Reece Williams, I think it's a decent acquisition, if you like, getting him to sign for Australia. He's going to be a good player.
He never gets the World Cup with Wales, so he didn't really have a choice, did he?
Well, exactly, as we mentioned the other week, he's never going to get into the World Cup with Wales, so it's
a good
choice.
What about Timmy Cahill? He's been under the cosh. He got a couple of goals. He gave a little bit of a media interview that some people liked, some people didn't. So, Russ, what do you think?
Fair play for Timmy Cahill. I mean, he obviously didn't want to be there giving that interview. He made his point. The next day, he did speak quite articulately about it all. I saw a TV interview with him afterwards, and he was fine. Just at that moment, he wanted to make a point. His on-field performance typical Timmy Cahill, a couple of goals from nothing, really. Definitely in the air, our best threat, I think. And they've got the second goal coming in on the far post after the keeper made an absolute hash of it, to be perfectly honest.
Bit
but picking
worry,
up
though.
The pieces.
That's our only threat, is a ball up to the middle to Josh Kennedy, and the Cahill comes over the
it's
back.
It's been like that for quite some time, though,
it
hasn't
has.
It?
I mean, not that day. I mean,
in terms of Timmy Cahill. I mean, I think Timmy Cahill, I think in terms of a goal-scoring midfielder, he's up there with the best in the world, isn't he?
Absolutely agreed, but he took all the headlines the other night, Cahill, but I might add, other than the two goals, he did absolutely nothing.
Absolutely.
I think he's not a great ball-playing midfielder. He's he's not a very good link between the midfielders and the striker or strikers, and but in the air, inside the six-yard box on the head, he's the best in the world.
But you have to agree, he is a threat.
Timmy Cahill, near per se, you're rubbish, but you score goals.
But he's a threat, isn't he? He is a threat, coming in and
takes
the pressure off.
We've put that one to bed now. We're going to talk, we're going to have a listen to Alan Stadjic, Young Matilda's coach. He's Young Matilda's, Alan's talking about the journey ahead. And then we'll be back to talk about the Asian Champions League.
Now, just to lay out the plans from here, you've got the Asian Cup Asian Cup, which acts as a qualifier for the World Cup. That's correct?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, what are your plans leading in? Can you just tell us when that is and what your plans are leading into that tournament?
Yeah, we've got a camp from the 26th to the 29th in Sydney, a 4-day camp, and then we'll have a 4-day camp up at the Gold Coast from the 8th to the 11th, and then we leave for South Korea on the 21st or 22nd of July. We've hopefully got two games lined up against South Korea the week before the championships. They're in the opposite group to us, so that'll give us a good standard of where we're at the week before, and then the World Cup qualifiers start on August the 1st, and our first game is against Japan, and then we got China on August the 3rd, so we've got our two big games, first and second.
So is there just three teams in the group, Alan, or is it there's four?
There's four.
Who's the other team?
Chinese Taipei on August the 5th. And then the top two teams from each group go to the semi-finals, and then the top three from the semi-finals go to the World Cup. So
that's a tough gig. Japan and China in the group is you know, judging by the standard of women's football, that's no easy run through.
No, not at all. Japan and North Korea are definitely the two standout women's teams in the world now. They'd be up there with Germany and USA and Brazil, and they're definitely good. China's probably gone off a little bit in the last few years, but they're still traditionally been one of the two or three superpowers in the world, but you know, I think we can definitely compete with all of them and beat all of them.
Yeah. So generally a good tour, Alan, plenty to build on, you would say?
Oh, fantastic tour. You know, we were helped out with some funding from the AIS. Couldn't be any more grateful to the AIS and FFA for putting the tour on. You know, we learnt so much about the players and so much about ourselves, and you know, the bonus for the benefit of Australian football is that we found a great training base there in Italy where we can launch further tours from and get more games from. So
what is that exactly? Is that I think I read it was the Australian Institute training base. Is that correct? Or
it is. Yeah, they're building one there, so they're just testing out all the facilities and venues and training access for all the different sports. So it's going to be a training base there, and the building's going to get started very soon. So they'll have an actual home facility, but we just use local hotels and training facilities around there, and the AIS have got a full-time staff there already who are looking after all the sports and help us set up the tour. So, you know, it's a fantastic base there, great facilities, great climate, and, you know, as I said, something that Australian football can use for you know, the next 5-10 years down the track.
I'm sure you'll be tempted to have your camps in Italy rather than cold Canberra in July.
I've put that motion forward. I don't know if we'll get the 300,000 funding in Italy.
You never know. We just got to the World Cup with the men, so who knows what could happen.
Yeah, exactly. The scenery around there was just, you know, breathtaking. We had beautiful lakes and the snow-capped mountains around us, you know. So it was, a world away from the bit of cold of the winter Canberra.
And fantastic for the young girls or the women, I guess, you know, 15, 16 years of age to get this sort of experience. I mean, not just playing football, but travelling to these countries. I mean, it's a fantastic opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. We did three or four day tours where we went out and saw some sights and saw some of the romance and history of Italy, which is just amazing, you know. And you know, even driving on the wrong side of the road, which we had to do, which took a few days of getting used to. But yeah, just the whole culture of Italy, it was fantastic, and you know, I'm sure it'll be a lifetime memory for all of us.
Is that a normal sort of thing on these trips, Alan, that you do fit in a bit of cultural side of it?
Well, we did. Well, we had the international, so it's pretty hard to do normal training load while you've got so many games. So, yeah, there were two or three days there where we had days off, you know, and got away from football for a bit and took in the sights. It was a pretty good base there, so it was half an hour to a lot of scenic locations. So, yeah, it turned out to be a good cultural benefit too.
That was on the stage talking young Matildas. And there was a pause there because we were so passionately debating the Socceroos and the World Cup squad that I actually forgot that the interview had finished. Never mind. We're talking Asian Champions League. Russ, you're still laughing at my technical expertise. Good on you.
That's all right. We were getting involved in the discussion. It was good.
We were. Newcastle Jets bringing you back down to earth. Newcastle Jets versus the Pohang Steelers in the Asian Champions League. Some people say, is it still going on? Yes, it is. Normally we have a bit of a break, but they've thrown in an extra round, and it's only a one-off round, so you only play away. So the Jets, unfortunately, are away to the Korean side. What do you think, Aaron? They're playing tomorrow night in Pohang. It's a last 16 for a place in the quarterfinals. Can they do it?
No, I think they'll get done over, and I think a big reason for that is they've got no central defenders. They've got the top two out. Ljubo Milosevic is out. Topol Stanley's out. They're throwing Job Wheelhouse in there and Ange Costanzo.
No, you're lucky Michelle is not here.
I hate people that come on this show and just don't say what they think. All right. But yeah, if Michelle, she normally sits in the same chair as you, and she would be bopping you on, mate, as a Newcastle Jets fan and the most passionate and optimistic Newcastle Jets fan going.
Having said that,
Song's back.
He's their best player.
Well, he's an interesting little player, isn't he? But I'm more interested in... so Joe Wheelhouse played. He played a good game last time they played.
He did, but he wasn't central
midfield. No, he wasn't. And also Ange Costanzo, who is very old and very slow. So they will have problems. And they're against Danielson, the Pohang Steeler guy who's... But Ange has played against him before with Adelaide.
Yep.
Danielson's pretty sharp. They only got a hat-trick against Central Coast in the... In the last round of fixtures.
No, to be honest, that's not that difficult at the moment.
No, the Steelers won on the weekend. Jay North was at the game. He didn't play for Incheon, but Pohang beat the Steelers, Incheon 4-1 with the second string, according to Jay North. And he said it's going to be between 25 and 30 degrees with humidity a real killer. And that's got to be hard for any Aussie team flying over for one-off game.
And how does it get drawn over in Korea? If it's a one-off game, how do they determine?
Yeah, well, this is interesting as well, because Pohang finished second in their group, didn't they?
Yeah, so...
As did...
the Jets.
I think they did, didn't they? Yeah, they finished second in the group, and the Jets did as well, so...
Yeah.
How does that work?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Did they win the group? Or they must have won the group.
I assume they won the group. So we're assuming they won the group, and that's the winners get home gig. Yeah.
Okay, fair
that
enough.
Seems fair enough, doesn't it?
Yep.
But why we're not having two legs, I don't know. But anyway, at least we've got a team through. Now, Jason Hoffman, big game for him. He scored his first goal last time. Coach of the under-20s, Jan Vesleyan, I interviewed him about 6 months ago. He was raving about Jason Hoffman, and I'm thinking, is this the same player I've been watching for the Newcastle Jets? But he did score a good goal, and maybe, you know...
I don't like him. I think he's the A-League's answer to Brett Holman. He's got heaps of energy. He's pretty quick. He charges around in every direction. Not always in the right direction, I might add you. And he shows so much enthusiasm and people think he's having a good game.
Right? Okay, so that's him wiped out.
Jeff Nuffman, no good.
His touches are fantastic.
What about, before we get on to Sasha, what about Frank... Vignaroli, the Italian.
I've only seen him play once and he had a great game. So
okay, so we're on a win there. Okay. Down in the group, Sasha Petrosky and up front. Down in the group's back. So, and the other thing about the Jets is I think they're our most attractive team, actually. Ben Kantrowski, I think he's worth watching just to see how he goes.
Agreed.
Alone, because he's really, you know, he's improved in the last game. You know, he's only played a year and he's improving so much. So anybody who follows Australian football, I'll say tune into that game. Not so much to watch the game, but just to watch Ben Kantrowski, because I think you're watching a future definite Socceroo.
Completely agree, and something that about him which I found, which said a lot, was that when he was 15 years old, when the Youth League came in, he was officially too young to sign for the Youth League. You need to be between 16 and 21, I think it is. But because they couldn't fit him in there, they decided they wanted him so much, they took him in the seniors team anyway.
So how long before he goes? He'd probably stay another year at max.
Well, he got offered a spot, I think, and he turned it down. He said he wanted to stay in the A-League.
Well, I think he's right. I mean, I think, you know, if he gets another season out of the A-League, he'll still only be 17. I mean, so it's phenomenal. And, I mean, the old adage is if you shine in the A-League at any age or the NSL, you're good enough to play in Europe, aren't you?
When I've seen him play, he looks like he's been there for years.
Yeah,
he's just got such composure and his position is fantastic.
But, they are the best footballer inside. I mean, you've got Tarik Elrich, Kantrowski, Vignaroli, Ljubo when he plays, Adam Griffiths. I mean, I think they're one of the best Australian sides, and that's why I think they could get a result tomorrow night. Because unlike the Mariners, they actually string a few passes together and can keep the ball.
I might be wrong, but the only way I think they can win tomorrow is if it goes to penalties.
You've never been wrong before, so no, I don't think you will.
I've been wrong plenty of times.
Okay, so Aaron, you think they're definitely out?
Yeah, I can't see them doing it.
Yeah. I have to agree with you. Yeah, I'm sorry for any Newcastle Jets fans that are listening. And I'd like to be proved wrong.
Yep,
because then
so.
We can have a chat about the semi-final, the last 16.
The quarterfinals, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
And I enjoy watching the game. I loved the last year in Adelaide. Went quite far.
Okay, so scoreline prediction?
3-1. I think the Koreans will go up, though. And then Newcastle will try and push forward. They'll get a couple more against them.
And
3-0 Pohang.
What about if your mate Sean Rooney comes on?
Is he back and fit now?
Yep.
If Sean plays, 3-0 Pohang.
I'd love to see Rooney
get on there and score. I was talking him up a lot last year, Aaron, when he was playing in the Sydney youth team, banging in goals left, right and centre, wondering why he couldn't get a run ahead of Aloisi. And then they promptly Newcastle came in and stole him.
They've been good. They've been the best producers of youth young players. Kantorowski, Rooney, Marco Jessic scored a goal. They've got Kasper Tafta sort of on the fringes. It seems to be the place to go if you want to get in.
They're happy to give the youngsters a run, aren't they? They don't seem to
but
be.
But also
hampered.
The coach. Clearly, the coach is, unlike the Mariners, they must have reasonably similar sized budgets. But, if you look at the Mariners compared to the Jets have a lot of young players. And they've actually got them through in Asia, which the Mariners went with the older fellas and it didn't work.
Yep, I agree.
Is that it?
Disagrees with whatever you say. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So we've got. Well, we're quickly running out of time, but just any last thoughts on Australian football this week, Russ?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of happy that they're through to the World Cup, as we've talked about before. The performance we mentioned last week, again, wasn't fantastic, but the result's all that matters. Now, we've got a couple of friendlies in the pipeline, by all accounts. Netherlands.
We've got the great Irish
Italy,
Republic in August.
Republic.
Yeah, and we've got the Netherlands, probably. We've got the Asian Cup qualifiers.
Different challenge as well, the European teams as well, which will be interesting to see how they cope with them.
Rumours of Italy as well, which would be nice.
That'd be good. And obviously, the last game's going to be played down in Melbourne, yep. Aaron, so no doubt you'll be going down again.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. That'll be a blockbuster, the same as the time we played Greece last time.
There's a wicked rumour going around they're going to be playing England, but I don't think so.
I don't think so. I can't see England coming over here just for the World Cup.
No,
if
well, we want to beat
England, it'll be over in England.
We'd like to beat you at the World Cup. Just on that, I'd love to get England at the World Cup.
Yeah, I would too. That'd be great.
Wouldn't that be good? Who else do you want, Aaron?
I would have said Iran for payback in 98, but they didn't qualify. The US I wouldn't mind after Arena said that we were the worst team in the last World Cup.
And we might be able to beat them.
Yeah, we might be able
so
to
beat
them.
So maybe America, England and South Africa.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'd also throw in that Gold Coast are playing the Fury tonight in the new game and the big rivalry between the two clubs. That'll
be
interesting.
The Gold Coast are just about to fly out next week to New Caledonia, then on to Hong Kong. Nice way to start your season, isn't it?
Yeah.
And okay. All right, well, that's about all we've got time for this week. Stay with us for the Canberra listeners. We've got the Pete Fennell and Russ will be talking with... George Hoyker, thank you very much. Okay, and if you're going to the near post, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, make sure you get to the near post and
get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome back to the Near Post. I'm Russ Gibbs. You're listening to the local show. Joining me this evening is Pete Fennell. How are you today, Pete?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks. Coming up, we've got some news and some results and an interview with George Hoyker. Is that pronounced correctly? So big interview with him coming up. But first off, we'll start very quickly then with some news. We'll just rip through a couple of quick ones. We've got an important announcement to make here. The ACT Association for Advancing Disabled Support and Recreation, Inc. have a guest speaker of Laurie McKenna at the Football Celebrities Lunch. Let's have a quick look when this is. Is there a date on this, Eamon? Doesn't seem to be. Can't see one. Oh, here we go. Friday, July the 10th. Kick-off at 12 noon for 12:30. Three-course lunch and $75. Per person, so that'd be interesting to get yourself across there. What happened on the weekend? Got any news for me, Pete?
Well, I'm interested in that Tuggeranong Belconnen result. The Belconnen have paid a very heavy price for their meltdown game the week before, and I guess from a coach's point of view, he's thinking about the next 3 weeks that he hasn't got a couple of his key players. So that was a nil-all result there. The Women's League. You've got the Women's League there, mate. There's one really good result there.
I do. Canberra FC, our team on the near post, got up on the weekend beating Belconnen United by 1-0, which is a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Indeed. And Woden Valley continue on their merry way with a 6-0 win over ANU. So they look the form team for sure.
They certainly do. The other results in the women's team, we Bell West beat Western Creek by 4-1. And in the men's league, the other results, O'Connor 2, ANU 0, Canberra City beating Woden Valley 3-0, and Canberra City cruising to a 7-0 victory over Queanbeyan City, as expected, I suspect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One result that I thought was interesting, down in the Premier League 16s, the Canberra City Majura team nailed Woden Valley. That came as a surprise to Woden Valley. Didn't seem to come as a surprise to Canberra City. They played really good football. Downside, the field conditions are awful, and I have to say that the grounds are really starting to fall apart.
And not very good grounds there. Did you get out to any games on the weekend, Pete?
Yeah, I went to that one. I caught up with a couple of junior games down at Woden Valley and of course, the Premier League game, which I'm obliged to be at for Woden. We did not have a lot of fun on the weekend, it has to be said.
Yeah, we're losing 3-0 to Canberra City, a bit of a surprise for you guys.
Yes, it was, and we didn't do well in the pathways. Our Premier League 18s are very good. But it highlighted a point at the 18s level, and you see it to a lesser degree in the 16s, to the 18s level, clearly there are some clubs who've got the juniors and others who are really struggling. And that might be an issue for them when licences come up.
Talking to players struggling, I heard a rumour on the weekend that the O'Connor Knights, prior to their match with ANU, only had 9 players in the changing room prior to kick-off, and they had to do a very quick call-around to see who they could get. They were picking up players, trying to call people in their State League Division 3, 5, 6, whoever could come over just to fill up the numbers for their Premier League team, which is worrying for them.
That's dreadful. No, I have to say, We've encountered teams in the course of the competition that have been in those circumstances. It becomes particularly evident at the 18s level. That's when you first see it. And then there's usually a mad scramble as it goes forward. Pathways often suffer.
Certainly do. And we're looking at the league table. Canberra FC, from 8 matches, still maintain their 2-point advantage over Belconnen United after that surprise 0-0 draw with Tuggeranong on the weekend. ANU sitting in third on 14 points. And then there's a bit of a logjam. Canberra Olympic, Canberra City and the O'Connor Knights all on 11, with Tuggeranong on 8 and Queanbeyan on 6. Still not out of it, and Woden bringing up the rear on 5 points. Have you got a women's league table over there, Pete?
Yes, the women's league table. Yes, mate, sorry. I was following yours. Well, Woden Valley, Bell West Foxes second, Belconnen United and Canberra FC. Western Creek still poised, but look, the standouts are Woden Valley and Bell West Foxes at the moment.
They certainly are, and they both got up again on the weekend. Leading goal scorers?
In the women's league, Grace Field from Woden Valley on 7 and Jessica O'Brien from Bell West Foxes on 6. The situation of the Golden Boot is changing as we speak, as they say in the Premier League. Leiter hasn't improved on his score of 16. Very impressive score.
Gutted for him.
That's right. However, John Glass from Canberra FC has crept up to 8, and he is doing very nicely, thank you.
Yeah, he bagged a hat-trick on the weekend. He usually plays at the back. Whether or not they've decided to push him further forward, I'm not sure. He got a hat-trick this week, a brace last week in the 2-0 win over Belconnen. Any idea if they're pushing him forward this, or whether he's just going up for corners?
You read my mind. How did he come to be scoring all the goals? Probably says a bit about the quality of their play.
It certainly does, and of course on the weekend there was a comeback goal for Paul Ivanich as well, off the bench, his first goal back since his accident pre-season, so that's nice to see. Dom Giampaolo, Adam Spalletta and Elliot Swangabani scoring the other goals for Canberra FC in their 7-0 win. A couple of other bits of local news. Mark Schwarzer is in town at the moment, right as we speak, in fact, at the Hellenic Club. He was there at 6:30 signing copies of Meg's and the Complete Left Foot, the fourth book in the Meg series. Anybody read that? Have you read any of his books yet?
No.
Aaron, you're still sat here. Have you read any of Schwarzer's books?
No, I haven't, but it's on my must-to-do list.
Yeah, we must get down and have a read of the Mark Schwarzer books. I'm sure that Eamon's got them all.
Is it an audio book?
The ACT President's 11 have started training last week for their clash with the Central Coast Mariners at the AIS Fields coming up soon. The synthetic turf is being laid at Hawker as we speak as well, which should be completed very soon for the opening of that on the 1st and 2nd of August. And Ray Juna was out scouting for players for Canberra United's Season 2 of the W League on the weekend, having a look at the Women's Premier League. So that's all pretty interesting. So we're going to have an interview in just a second. I'd like to introduce us to who you've been speaking to this week, Pete.
Yes, George Hoitka is the Director of Co-Curricular at Radford. This is a really interesting bloke. The intro I give him will say more detail. We've done two interviews with him. One is his thoughts on junior football, which we're not playing tonight. But the other interview is, if you like, the journey of the talented player through his eyes. It's in two parts. Part one about to come up, and he's got some definite views on the talented player and the price one might pay if you think you got it one.
Okay, so let's have a listen and hear what George had to say.
We're on. Okay, we're live again. Right, speaking to George Hoitker, teacher, poet, actor, writer and director of co-curricular at Radford, we're going to talk this time about the talented young player, in inverted commas. How do you get them, where do they come from and where do they go to? And perhaps in between, what do you do with them when you reckon you've got one? The ages I'm talking about are from the age of 10 to 18. All of the heat and the intensity about talented players seems to occur in the junior lower end of youth, at least most of it anyway. And of course, it's characterised by high levels of parental involvement and concern and everything that might or might not go with that. So, bearing in mind that we've just got a new national curriculum about to launch on us from the FFA, who talk about the two streams of football. One is the talented stream, in inverted commas, and the other is the community stream. We're now looking at the talented stream, which is realistically the most minor percentage of the total football players, male and female. What is a talented junior player, George?
It's a tough question. Firstly, can I just say I'm really thrilled to hear that they've actually noticed that there are two streams, because you could be forgiven for thinking that there was no such thing. Yes. So I actually think that the FFA need a thumbs up for actually acknowledging the fact that there's two avenues of people that are playing, probably 99% of which are in the other stream. So the elite stream's a very, very small one, isn't it? I guess is where I'd like to start. And before you'd want to identify a kid as going for a swim in that one, you'd want to be really, really sure about what you're doing. And unfortunately, when you're looking at issues such as talent, you got to make sure that you get it right. you got to say the right things. You got to choose the right pathways, the right mentors. I'm not sure the question's an easy one to answer, because you can have kids that bloom late in life, and then it takes a very, very special sports professional to be able to, I think, really, really identify the skills that will allow them to make a living in a certain sport. If you're talking about just at the representative level, junior sports, nearly every sport that exists out there has got that sort of stream. I guess you're looking for a kid. I would like to think that you're looking for a kid that loves his sport and is willing to still have that love and enjoyment and passion and intensity past all of the things that you're about to ask them to sacrifice.
Yes.
So that might be my answer. It's something a little bit away from technical skill. Is the kid still going to say after their training 5 days a week that they still love the game and they want to get even more of it? They live and breathe it.
Yep. And there really is a difference here, isn't it? You're touching on that importantly, I think, that if we're talking about that talented player stream, we are talking about going from children who want to represent their region, their state or territory, maybe through to Australian representative. So they want to really play good football. But this thing morphs after a while, and then becomes, do I want to be a professional footballer? Just exactly when that happens is not clear to me.
Yeah, I like the way you've said that. I think, you know, having been in that boat myself when I was a youngster, you always like to play to the best of your ability. And sometimes that is at a rep level. But you're right. It gets to a point then where you think about, do you want to make a living out of it? And that's when things are getting really, really quite serious. And I think people need to be very, very careful about the choices that they make, because you know, there can be a lot of regret in this life, and I feel very, very sorry for the person that's, you know, given up their entire childhood for this sort of like perceived endpoint of being a professional footballer, and then they're looking back going, oh God, I could have you know, I could have smelled the roses, I could have done this and that and etc. So what point is that? I don't know, they're telling us it's a lot earlier, aren't they, Peter? They're saying it has to happen earlier, and I just have to say, I'll put myself out on a limb that I don't like that at all. I don't like the thought of a kid at being told at 12, well, you're the next best thing, so we're going to prepare you and groom you for a career in football.
Well, I recently went and watched the under-13 boys' nationals in Canberra, and there was some spectacular football on display there. I thought it was unfortunate, and this will be unpopular, but I thought it was unfortunate they had to go and pick an Australian under-13 team. Couldn't they just have left it?
Oh, God's sake. Look, get every single person that's on that selection panel and slap them. Okay? Slap them with a fish. Okay? They are probably wannabe people themselves that have never made an Australian team and never will. Okay, that are thinking that they've got some sort of, oh, that really makes me angry, actually, that some sort of like power over choosing an under 13 Australian. Look, all of you selector guys are doing that, go get a life. It's irrelevant at that age group that they get identified for that. I almost think it's almost irrelevant that there's state teams at that level. You have a look at the kids that are playing in the under-13 rep level and then compare it 5 years later with the names on the lists for the 18s.
There's a lot of growing between 13 and 16.
And if it's exactly the same, I'll eat my words.
We just got interrupted by a telephone call there, but George is sitting amongst hundreds of children around their school and plenty of staff, so we've dodged a bullet there, George.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was powers of B telling me to tell it to me to slow down. I was in a rant.
Well, stoke the fire. Okay. We're talking about under-13s.
Yeah. What I was saying is, have a look at the teams at the rep teams at the 13s level and compare them to where they are at the under-18s. And if the names are exactly the same, then maybe you've got some reason to talent identify. Another fact that just popped into my head was, if you have a look at the kids that are playing in the Joeys that eventually go on to play in the Socceroos, I think you'll find that the exact same thing occurs, that there's very, you know, except for a very, very small percentage, it's not the same names. And so talent identification really needs to stop taking itself seriously and look at itself a little bit more carefully, because, you know, you're responsible for what you sow. And in some cases, I think you're sowing some very, very dangerous seeds in the minds of young players and parents.
And that thinking infiltrates into that other stream of community football and drives parents and players to behave and move in ways that they might not otherwise do. It must rob them. I think it robs clubs and teams and players, parents, of a lot of enjoyment.
Yes, I agree. I feel sorry for those kids. Can I get back to the Australian under 13?
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel sorry for every kid represented on that. They have to carry that sort of like subjective stigma that some adults put onto them. Yeah, sure, it's an honour, but it's a dubious one. Okay, and it's going to send the wrong messages out. A lot happens from the age of 13 through to 18, and I pity the kid that is being told at 13 they're going to be a Socceroo and future professional star.
Well, indeed.
Because that's got to be the expectation with being named in an Australian under-13 side.
Well, it's a notion that'll seduce a lot of children and parents, and will decisively influence the decisions they make far too early.
I agree.
Look, I'm sitting in your office, and you pointed out the school photo here, and it aligns with the question we did in our first interview. Of all the thousands of students that you've seen come through here in 20 years, and many thousands of football players, how many would city, how many real, in a general sense, male and female, have would sit inside that talented nation that the FFA now pursue?
One of each gender. And we're talking about 21 years of hundreds of footballers passing through my a little Radford football gates.
Well, 18 teams, 20 teams every year.
Yeah, it's probably more than that.
Yeah, oh, of course it would be.
You've got to keep that statistic in mind. But the problem is, we're often dealing not only with parents that are living vicariously, but you can also be dealing with coaches that are.
Yes.
The weight of expectation, like we've got a soccer full moon howling. Watch the wheels come out now because we're in the World Cup. Mm. Okay, the avenue through to the pinnacle is what would you say is a clearer one? Mm. There is an end point, and watch out because it just gets onto everybody's ambitions, everybody's dreams, and look. I used to be a person that think, obviously, ambitions and dreams are a really, really important thing. Okay, but if they become so consuming that you're missing all the significant reality checks that occur along the way, and they're evident every time you step field on a junior onto a junior field on the weekend, then God help us.
Can I ask you? It's a loaded question, mate. How many? You're amongst these young people all the time. How many really want to be that at that top end? How many really want that? How many, as opposed to just wanting to play good football and maybe doing some sort of representative thing? How many really want the whole deal?
Well, the stats would be a little bit higher than the ones I just mentioned. But kids also have an ingrown reality check machine themselves in their hearts and in their soul, and there's a difference between really, really wanting something and knowing the reality of the situation. So I would say a lot of kids want it, but they don't know what it takes to get to that height. And a lot of them think it's something that comes easily when it doesn't. Our superstars, it's very rare, have Cinderella stories. The truth of the matter is that they've given up significant portions of their lives for this thing that they love. Mm. They've trained hard, they've sacrificed everything from friendships to relationships to, to their childhood.
Yes.
And that's the price that they've been willing to pay to have a chance at the top flight.
Mm.
No, nobody wants that.
No. Indeed.
A handful of people do, and are often disappointed.
And all the more reason I would think that they need good advice early and along the way. And parents need good advice too. I mean, you can't know everything.
Yeah, unfortunately you can't tell all parents. To be a parent is to be... You still got to be... You sometimes are a little bit clouded to the things that you want your children to be. And that's normal. That's human nature. Yep,
it is. Moving along, how in terms of where you sit here, how do you identify talent in the football sphere?
Oh, you know, this thing they call flair, sparkle. You see that sort of like... you can sense that something's coming very, very naturally to a young athlete and to a performer. That's not to say you can't work really hard to achieve your goals, whatever they may be in life, but I look for that sparkle. Mm-hmm. And it exists, but it doesn't come all that often.
Right. When you do see it and identify it and you confirm it in your own mind, how do you nurture and develop and motivate a talented player? Are there any gender differences there too?
Well, that's a good question. Often I find that it's probably beyond you, to be honest. The thing that nurture and all of that sort of stuff that you're talking about is something that's probably beyond your capability if you've got a truly talented player. that you think will make it on the really big stage. So I guess my answer is a little bit of a cop out. It's saying you have to find the people with better expertise than you have, and you have to be able to admit that you do not have them to allow a kid to actually grow. But I would do all that I could to make sure that the kid kept the sparkle, because there's something really, really positive in that sort of word and that image and that sort of idea. Mm. And it can get doused by by expectation and negative experiences. And
for those players that do step forward in this way, there's a lot of personal courage involved, isn't there?
Yeah. Yes, because often you'll have to move clubs, you'll have to move context, you have to move away from your friends, I think, is the major thing, isn't it? And that's a big step to take.
It is. It is. Just as a small under 11 will take all season to do his favourite move that one of his stars on TV does, and that was his shining moment of the season, in the same sense the talented player has to internalise a lot of things early. I wonder how that courage is sustained, because I don't think courage is necessarily a bowl that is automatically refilled after each appearance.
I have to be honest, I have no idea either. I wouldn't be able to really answer that, because otherwise I would be a coach of champions, and I'm not that. I don't know.
Right. Now, again, reflecting on the school context here, and I ask you to weigh in as a teacher, or at least come from that point of the compass. You can see talented player. How do you get a balance between football, school, and everything else? And where does a parent fit into this equation?
Well, I think a parent should be one of the people that is obviously monitoring for balance or imbalance. With their kids' lives, but it normally manifests itself in how the kid plays. And I go back to this whole notion of having spark and having sparkle. You can see in a young athlete or a young player when that is not there, and often when it's not there, there's an imbalance.
Then you go looking for the reason.
Yeah, and there's a lack of sparkle, there's a lack of creativity. Something's not allowing that human being to live.
At the ages we're talking about, do you think school-based teams do that better than clubs?
No, I think it's all relative. Like I said in the first half of our interview, I think the school context suits some players and it doesn't suit others. Yeah. And I feel the same about the clubs. There's too much made of this school versus club thing. I think both, you know, we all want the same thing, which is the best for our children, and at the end of the day I think it has to come down to a wise choice that's obviously made by the parent as to what's the best avenue for their child. And other people should stop weighing you know, everybody's an expert. I mean, other people should stop weighing in on a decision that really, really needs to be made by the stakeholders, which are the parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, quite agree. And this issue of the talented player really does rest heavily on parents, even for the most obsessive ones. It's no easy burden to carry, I suspect.
Oh no, the sacrifices you are going to be asking of your child will be ones that you will have to make. And we're talking about everything from financial to personal. In much the same way that you're entering into a contract which you are a part of.
Yes, absolutely. Now, talented players, talented football players. Do you see, as you see the children coming through here at Radford, do you see some essential gender differences in the way they develop? Let's kick it down a notch. It doesn't necessarily have to be to representative level, but.
Yes, I think there are. I mean, there's different patterns, is a word I like to use, because it's not as prescriptive of how the kids evolve. But no, you can vary. You can have a team at the under 16 girls level, which are just playing sport because they really really enjoy it. Mm. And then the year follows, you can have a side that's very, very, if you like, mature and focused in their approach, that want to do the best and want to train hard and work really, really hard. So no, I'm very very hesitant to generalise, because every time that I've done that in the past, there's been exceptions to the rule. Mm. So my gut instinct is that no, I wouldn't. But you can look at what the studies in sort of like adolescent education are suggesting, and there's obviously a time where the girls are emotionally yep. moving at a much greater and faster rate than the boys, and then the boys catch up, and there's those patterns can affect the sporting field, but there's always going to be exceptions to the rule.
Right. Well, I've noticed within junior football, there's a predilection to take girls and play them across in the boys' teams, and similarly in boys, to play them up levels, age levels higher, in the belief that this will match their perceived talent and assist their development. How do you feel about that?
It depends on the context. I've had very good experiences with girls playing in the males competition. It's, for want of a better word, toughen them up, sharpen them up in terms of speed on the ball. It's increased the pace at which they play the game and the rate of their skills develop. I think that's a separate issue to boys or girls or anybody really actually playing up an age, and I think you've got to take that on a case by case basis. But I can remember a time where people were doing that, so we end up getting to the point where so many people are doing that there's no point in having age groupings.
Well, yeah, that's really where my question is heading to.
What's the point of having age groupings if everyone's playing up, down, around?
Yeah.
I have coached some teams that have been quite advanced for their age and have done really, really well. And I would have to say there's very little purpose served in keeping them playing in that age group if they're going to keep winning and dominating all the time. The only way they're going to grow is to be challenged at their appropriate level of playing.
But it would, I guess you're also saying, implied there is, it has to be a very considered decision.
I think that's the thing with all of this. You've got to. I find it hard to see any wisdom in not dealing with things on a case by case basis.
Yep.
The second you start to make generalisations about anything to do with gender, age, ability, etc., you're going to run into huge problems if you start to work to formulas.
Mm.
And I think that's why we're in trouble with a lot of the way I think we approach junior sport, because everybody thinks that there's a formula that's going to magically work, that's consistent for every given kid.
Thanks, George.
You're welcome.
And that was Pete talking to George Hoiker from Radford College. Pretty interesting stuff there that George had to say. Next week, Pete, you're catching up with Eddie Senator from Futsal, talking about the Boomerangs, I understand.
Yes, indeed. Boomerangs FS, Futsal Sala, new club. They're going to be campaigning in the New South Wales Premier League, and they're looking for players. More of that next week.
Excellent stuff, and we've got about a minute or so just to wrap up, so have you got one more item for us?
Yeah, one that strikes from Capital Football, very definitely noteworthy. Check their website, you'll see they're inviting registrations of interest from players at the under-12 level. The intention is to pick a team, I understand a squad of about 18, to campaign in Korea in a competition. More detail to follow, but keep an eye on their website.
Good stuff, and I've got two pieces of news to finish with. Caitlin Munoz is out for the season for Canberra United. She's injured her knee. She's expected to be the assistant coach for Canberra United, though. Alan Eamon's asked me to point out that Madura Junior Soccer Club has now got on board, and they're now Madura Football Club. So congratulations, Madura. We'll finish on that note. Thanks very much for coming in, Pete. Thanks for Aaron for chipping in now and again. Thanks very much for helping out. And remember, if you go into the near post...
Get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.